word.
I know. I'm editing that. Can we start over?
Okay, yes. Starting over.
And back from a very chaotic beginning that I'm going to edit out, welcome to Smell You Later, the podcast about scents.
And smells with your co-host.
Oh, it smells, right.
I could be both.
It's fine.
Scents and smells, smells and scents. They're kind of synonymous.
Right.
Podcast I just feel like they have like different, I don't know, different vibes. Yeah.
I mean. Hi.
Hello.
Welcome back.
Thanks for tuning in. It's been a week. I feel like there's no point in talking about the election because by the time it airs, it's like.
Yeah, I've gone over that in my head too. You know, what should we say? But these are also out of order. And I feel like people know where we stand. It's always fuck Donald Trump hours around here. So.
Yeah.
Do you look at the time? So yeah, it's election season here though. We hate it, but we're happy to be here recording our favorite podcast and your favorite podcast as a little escape from all the bullshit that's going on around us.
Indeed.
Thanks for joining us.
Yeah.
Sable, what do you smell like today?
I smell like...
I'm so excited that we are talking about this because...
Oh God, yes.
We're... I know I just interrupted her. I'm very sorry. That was very rude of me because we're wearing...
Twins.
Twins. What are
we wearing? Fraternal twins. I'm wearing Roses on Ice by Killian. It's one of his new launches in his liquors collection. And side note, I should tell the world, well, I tell everybody else, it's not a secret to people who know me. I don't drink alcohol because it doesn't work with my body. It wants to kill me quickly, swiftly, annoyingly. So I don't have a ton of experience with booze. Let's just put it that way. And the experience I have, it's come straight back up. So the liquors collection, initially I was like, meh, whatever. But then I smell them and they're so exquisite. Boozy fragrances, I think, have, you know, they have this kind of reputation, or should I say, they tend to like get ahead of themselves or be too much. And I think that's part of the charm. But Roses on Ice is so unexpected to me. First of all, it doesn't smell like roses, like at all to me. It's meant to be a fresh, crisp, refreshing, clear liquor cocktail. Mm-hmm. It has cucumber and juniper. What else?
Rose. That's like all they call out on the product page, yeah.
Because I don't get the...
I know.
Yeah. It's got cucumber, juniper berries, lime. Okay, yeah. Rose, musk, and sandalwood. So it's not super complicated, but it is impactful. And when I spray it on myself, like right from the get, it's sharp. It's really sharp and crisp, but also really zesty. I mean, I love seltzer, so like I can compare it to like having a nice cold seltzer on a hot day and you're like, damn, that's good. Mm-hmm. But then after wearing it, it has like a little bit of sweetness that comes out and it never really quite gets warm in my perception. Like to me, it stays pretty cool and fresh, but it has like a playful effervescence to it that I just think is like a really fun, sexy, but cool scent. It's not sexy in like a lavacious kind of like seductive way. It's just like very cool to me. Mm. So that's Roses on Ice.
Yeah.
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 Tynan, what do you smell like?
Listen, let me just get this out. So she's wearing Roses on Ice. I am wearing the other part of the liquors collection called Angel's Share. We did not plan this. We're just so connected. I just want to say
synced up.
That these motherfuckers are so good.
They are.
I love Killian, right? But when these came, I was like, oh, fragrance is inspired by liquors. How groundbreaking. I am eating my words. Oh.
These are my favorite Killian scents.
They're
for sure.
So good. Mm-hmm. So I just wrote about these. So I'm like deeply familiar with them. But also, I've been bartending my entire life since I was like 19. So I know alcohol even better than I know perfume.
He makes up for what I don't know.
Yeah, exactly. And where Sable does not drink, I have drank a lot in my life. So both fragrances are inspired by their respective liquor served over rocks. Roses on Ice is, as Sable said, inspired by gin and lime over ice, nothing else. And to me, as a fragrance, that doesn't really appeal to me. But like she said, it's super fresh. And to me, it's really dewy and like round.
Yeah.
And it is sweet, but not in like a not a saccharine way. It is like almost a sporty way, but not in any of the ways that goes horribly wrong. It's wet. It's so good.
Yeah.
And the counterpart to that is called Angel's Share. It is inspired by cognac on ice.
Brown liquors.
Yeah. So we have a light liquor and a dark liquor. Cognac as a liquor is very sweet, very sippable. And Angel's Share. The name comes from when cognac is aging in a wooden barrel and part of it evaporates into the air, and they would refer to that as like an offering to the gods or whatever. So that evaporation into the air is called the Angel's Share. Anyway.
Weird, but all right.
Yeah, exactly. Angel's Share as a scent is, like, I mean, I read.
It's really good.
I read the description and I was like, oh shit. Because it is truly just beautiful. It is everything I love. It's perfect for this time of year. It's something mm-hmm. I would wear all year round.
You know what it reminds me of? A little bit of Margiela by the fireplace. I get that vibe.
Yes.
Two houses, both alike in dignity.
Right. I just like, I'm so deeply familiar with these right now. And also like, I know liquor so well that it's like. Yeah. So Angel's Share, it starts with cognac oil. You've got essence of cinnamon, tonka bean, oak, praline, vanilla, and sandalwood. So it's very warm, very mm-hmm. sweet.
Woody, spicy.
Very spicy. Warm.
Yeah.
It is drop dead gorgeous.
It is.
To Sable's
sexy
point,
as hell.
It is very, very sexy. No,
see, this is the sexy in a seductive way one. And then I think Roses on Ice is the sexy in a cool one.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, Roses on Ice isn't trying to be sexy.
Yeah.
But Angel's Share knows it is.
Oh, cool.
To Sable's point, it is similar in a way to By the Fireplace. By the Fireplace, to me, that has so much throw that it mm-hmm. is. It is such a beautiful scent, but it's almost like you got to be really careful where, when, and how you wear that, because everyone's gonna know. And that, to me, as much as I do love the scent, it does turn me off to it a little bit, even though I do love it. This one, to me, wears perfectly because it has enough throw that, you know, if you're close to me, you're going to smell it. But I don't feel like, oh my God, like six people down from me are smelling this right now. I mean, it's everything that I love about scent. So of course I'm obsessed with it, but it's just like beautiful, warm, sweet, kind of woody, very soft, velvety. And it's very indulgent. It's, I hate this word, but it like super decadent. Like it is just, it just like brings me so much joy every time I spray it on. I love it. I love both of them.
It's very slinky to me.
Yeah. Yeah. And I don't know. I just can't wait to wear it all winter. And like, so I wore Angel's Share first, obviously, because I was like, get this on me now. I wasn't too jazzed about wearing Roses on Ice because like, okay, it's like gin, rose. Like, I know what that's going to be. I didn't. I'm so pleasantly surprised by both of them. I think they're so fantastic.
I feel like Roses on Ice is like your leather jacket, like your leather moto jacket. And Angel's Share is like your fur jacket. Or like your fur coat.
I feel like Roses on Ice is just like a sundress on a patio. It's just like on a beach, on a patio, on a beach. I don't know. It's just so like.
I don't get sunny with it.
Really? Oh, yeah. I get a lot of sun with it. To your point, you mentioned cucumber in it, right? The cucumber and the juniper berries really make this scent very literal because juniper berries are what separates vodka from gin. So you take vodka, you distill it with juniper berries and some other aromatics and botanicals, and you get gin, right? But when you put a cucumber in a cocktail, and especially when you distill a gin with cucumber, as is the case with Hendrix, it takes away all of that pine tree that you get when you have a gin and tonic or gin rocks or whatever. And it just makes it way smoother and way more sippable. And that comes through so nicely in the scent that I just like, I can't wait to wear that when the weather warms up a little bit too. I think, I mean, to me, all fragrances are gender neutral, but this is going to play so well on any gender.
Oh, totally.
And I would love to smell it on, you know, on a male identifying person. They're both.
God. Okay. So like a little off topic.
Go.
I went on a date with a man and he smelled so good.
Oh yeah. What was he wearing?
Okay. I didn't ask because I didn't want to know.
That is so smart.
I just want to know it in my heart, not in my brain. Mm-hmm. I'm convinced it was like, it smelled familiar, but I couldn't quite put my finger on it. But I was thinking like, oh, it does smell like a Killian fragrance I've smelled before, or a commodity fragrance.
Oh.
Yeah. I didn't mean to like transition.
I was going
to
say, was that a transition?
Hold on.
You go.
I brought that up because as you were talking about scents you want to smell on other people, like these two, Angel's Share and Roses on Ice, mm-hmm. are ones that I think are equally alluring regardless of gender, mm-hmm. but I think will have very different translations as well.
It's funny because I think our takes on Angel's Share are similar. I think our takes on Roses and ice are different.
Yes, 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 yes.
Very different.
Yeah.
This one time I went on, this is, I mean, like back in the day, or I can't even believe I remember this for many reasons, but I went on a few dates with this guy who also smelled really, really good. Mm-hmm. And I like knew I wasn't into it. And it was like, whatever, like a handful of dates. I remember thinking the last two dates, I was like, I gotta see him again. Mm-hmm. Because like we'll probably go back to his place and then I can raid his medicine cabinet and figure out what scent
he
wore.
Why didn't you just ask?
Well, you know, Sable, when you say it like that, okay. It, you know, seems so easy. But I did. Yeah, I went back to his place. Yeah. He lived in this bomb apartment and it was a Kenzo scent.
Oh.
Or maybe it was actually, we just talked about it. Maybe it was Issey Miyake. You know
they're
the ones?
Kind of similar. The one that looks like a flower?
Yeah.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
Yeah.
That's what
that's Kenzo. Right?
Wait. No, that's Issey Miyake.
Is that Issey Miyake?
I think. I'm pretty sure.
Fuck.
Yeah. I know. I like can see the bottle in my head. It's like long and narrow, clear, and it has a like a flower graphic.
Yep.
Yeah.
Well, anyway, sorry to that man.
Well, at least he smelled really nice.
He did.
Yeah. See, I wouldn't ask him, but yes, like similar situation. If I went back to his apartment, I would be like just snooping in his medicine cabinet to be like, what is
that? Was
this?
Absolutely a bad game. I was like, yeah, you'll have to excuse me. It was, yeah. No, it was Kenzo. This.
Oh, okay. We were thinking of totally different
that
things.
Also looks just like the Issey Miyake one, just not bent.
Yeah, kind of. Low water. So it's called water.
Both of these scents slap, actually. Yeah. No matter whichever
Kenzo's
one.
Kenzo's great. They have great fragrances.
They really do.
Yeah. Anyway, I was just like, oh, it's nice to smell someone who smells nice. The
Isn't
end.
It, though?
That's like, I mean, that's part of what I missed about dating is like, you don't get to smell people. And I'm like, oh, that's really nice. I kind of like said it. I was like, oh, wow, you smell really good. And thinking automatically, he'd be like, oh, it's this. But then I'm like, oh, right. You're not a woman. You don't do that.
That's so funny.
Yeah. I mean, whenever someone compliments me on something I'm wearing, like for some reason, my immediate reaction to be, it's like, oh, it's this.
Well, same.
Yeah.
I always want to know what people are wearing. Scent wise, lipstick wise. Like, I don't care. I'll ask anyone.
Maybe I'll just text him and be like, I know you never want to see me again. But I have to know.
That is not true.
We'll see. We'll see. We'll see.
I'm obsessed with that.
Anyway.
I have on a guest on the show. So we have some questions for you.
Yes. Why don't you love me?
What were you wearing and why don't you love me?
Speaking of my fake transition, though, God, I could have sworn it was Commodity Velvet.
Maybe it was.
You know what? Time will tell. If it's meant to be, I will find out. We'll see. But
speaking of Commodity
Speaking
Velvet,
of Commodity.
Speaking of Commodity.
Guess who's on the show? The name you read on the title. So, I don't know if many people were aware, but Commodity, it's been around since, I almost want to say 2015.
I was going to say 2014.
Oh, okay.
I remember what apartment I was in when I got the Discovery set. Maybe 2014.
Around there. Yeah. Around there. Okay. No, you're right. Wow, you're totally right. 2014, it launched. 2013, it was a Kickstarter. But anyway, Commodity Goods, they're one of the first fragrance brands that were direct to consumer. You couldn't find them in stores yet, and they would just send you a discovery set of all the samples of their scents. And then when you bought that, I think it was what, like $25 or something? Mm-hmm. It was pretty cheap, but that cost would go towards the bottle you bought, which That's is pretty cool.
Such a good idea.
Yeah, it's amazing.
They're sort of like the Warby Parker of scents.
Yeah.
I'm so they're sick of hearing that, but
yeah.
I also don't care.
Too late.
Yeah.
And then they got into Sephora. They expanded their line. Mm-hmm. They have three different tiers. There's like the white label, the black label, the platinum label. And then mysteriously, March of last year, they just shut down suddenly.
They popped smoke. They were gone.
I thought they were doing great. I was hearing about them more and more.
Yeah.
I don't know what happened.
I suppose we don't get into it, but.
But I just remember thinking like, yo, how come I don't see Commodity in Sephora anymore? How could, like, where is it? Like, why can't I find it anymore? And then I was like, oh, they're done. They're done.
That's the thing, because Commodity had such a huge name and brand recognition to people who weren't, you know, fragrance freaks like us. A lot of people knew and wore and loved Commodity.
Yeah.
And like you said, they were in Sephora, which is one, not easy to do.
Yeah.
Two, gives you huge distribution and, by extension, name recognition.
Yep.
I mean, to me, it was like, oh, they're not going anywhere. And then they did.
And then they dipped. But in my research, I discovered that somebody bought Commodity and was basically refounding the brand. Mm-hmm. And it was this one guy. He's just like, I like this brand, so I bought it. And I was like, whoa.
Yeah, imagine.
Wait, people can just buy businesses. I'm like, wait, this is America. You can buy anything you want. So he actually made a very clever documentary series mm-hmm. that's on the website.
Is it on the website yeah. or on YouTube?
No, well, I think it's on YouTube and or maybe Vimeo. Well, either way, they're embedded on the website, so you can find them there.
Yeah.
There's about 10 episodes, but they're all about 5 minutes each.
They're very,
so they're very short.
Snackable.
Super snackable.
And we found this little docuseries before we reached out to Commodity. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, we didn't, you know, have any stake in the game yet, but content like this is what I want from every brand. Yes. And it's so hard, like, as a brand to, one, create content like this for many reasons in my little experience on the brand side, but two, just hard to find good behind the scenes mm-hmm. content like this that actually tells you something from a real person
yep.
and illustrates it in such a cool way. If you have any interest in fragrance or documentary, you should look up this little docuseries. I found it on the brand's YouTube page. It's a really, really just like entertaining, satisfying
it
watch.
It's honestly like, I feel like it wouldn't be out of place on like Bravo or something. No. Like it was like a reality show, which is really cool.
Also, it looks expensive.
It does look expensive. The production value is top notch.
Yeah, I got some questions.
So anyway, in these little videos, the new founder, his name is Vegan Arsanian. He kind of just explains why he bought the brand, what you do once you buy a fragrance brand, like everything from just literally checking out the goods that you bought in the warehouse yeah. and then like apprising your current team, like, guess what? We do this now.
Yeah.
And also how to move forward with the brand. What do you want to change? Like, what do you want to keep? What do you want to let go?
It's also very current. All the yeah. content, like it starts off from, I don't know when they started filming, recent history, and then mm-hmm. goes through, oh, now there's a global pandemic.
Yep.
What do you do with the brand that you're trying to get off the ground again?
Yeah.
And then a pandemic hits and how do you move forward? So it's sort of happening in real time, which also makes it like current and relevant.
It's
and
riveting.
Yeah.
It's riveting stuff.
I loved it, dude.
Yeah. So we were talking to Vegan Arslanian, the refounder of Commodity. Do you want to start by introducing yourself?
Yes, of course. Sure. So my name is Vegan Arslanian. That's how it's pronounced. I'm an architect by profession, believe it or not.
Cool.
Yep. Was a family business in perfume forever since I was born. And I've been doing this for 20 something years. I worked as an architect for a year and then I jumped into the family business. I actually produced my own brand about, 21 years ago. I completely lost my shirts, you know, almost went bankrupt. Horrible, horrible time. Swore would never do it again. got into distributing fragrances. You know, I got into the current path of the career. And then, of course, Commodity landed on my lap. And, you know, what I swore I would never do again, I did again. So here we are.
So you just can't stay away.
Right. It's a great origin story.
So how did you originally get into the fragrance industry?
Yeah. So my father, family, actually in the Middle East, was a distributor of fragrance since 1964. So we've been, as a family, kind of embedded in the perfume business for my whole life. And as soon as I graduated, I started working as an architect. And on my first day, I think I wanted to jump out the window. I remember it was 39th and 11th at Madison, 49th and Madison. My first day, I'm like, I can't do this. I lasted a year. I got out of working as an architect, and then I created my own brand. And you know, I created this brand, and I sent samples to Nordstrom. I'll never forget. It was for the Southwest in California,
mm-hmm.
and I was in the city. My office was in New Jersey. I was in the city at a meeting, and at that time, you know, you check your voicemail back then. No cell phones, no text or whatever. So I get this voicemail, says, you know, hi, Vegan, this is Gabrielle from Nordstrom. You know, we received your samples, loved everything. We have nothing to talk about. I'm going to go ahead and fax you a PO.
Wow.
And, yeah. And what's a PO for our listeners?
Sorry. A purchase order, right?
Great.
Purchase book.
Got it.
So at that time, Nordstrom was bought regionally. So this was, I knew Nordstrom, that area, Southwest California, was, I think, something like 30 stores. So I got in my car and I'm just flying through the Lincoln Tunnel back to my office. You know, I'm dying to see what this purchase order is. And it was $80,000. I mean, this is 1999.
Wow.
Right? Yeah.
Very lucky cool. First order.
Lucky first order, right? Didn't even talk to her. She just backed her over. And so that began. And, you know, I shipped my stuff. I shipped everything. And I'm waiting for sales, right? So Nordstrom's and all department stores used to fax you on a weekly basis your results, door by door, how much you've sold, right? So I see the fax and it says zeros everywhere.
Oh, God. Oh Jesus.
All zeros, right?
Oh, God.
So I call the office, their office. I'm like, oh, yeah, this must be a mistake. You know, like, is it not registering? Am I not in your computer system? She's like, no, that's correct.
Oh, no. God.
I'm like,
great.
I'm like, she's like, well, how many salespeople do you have out there? I'm like, what do you mean, how many salespeople do I have out there? She's like, yo, do you have any staff out there? I said, yeah, your staff is out there, like department store staff. She's like, no, you have to put your own people out there. I said, so I have to sell to you and then I have to go and sell my own product to the public? I didn't quite say that. That was just going on, you know, in my head. So that began my, you know, I was obviously very green and I didn't realize in the American department store business that you have to sell in and you have to sell out.
I feel like they could have told you that too.
Well, I mean, I was 24, 23, and I guess I should have known. So that started the cycle that I was like, obsessed. You know, any entrepreneurial person who's motivated and wants to go sell. So I ran around hiring people, selling product, but ultimately I kind of lost my shirt. Because I had to pay for all these freelancers to, you know, the people that you dislike at the store, you know, you avoid the people that are spraying fragrance. I had to hire those people. So that blew up. And in 2001, I pulled out of department stores and I actually didn't step foot into a department store for 5 years. Can you imagine?
Wow. It's traumatic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
My wife would go in, you know, that you have to go through a department store to get to the mall. I would go around. Mm-hmm. Like I would go around the building and meet her there. It was really traumatic. And that's that. And then I got into representing brands. So I couldn't make and sell. So I figure, let me not make and let me just sell. And that's how it started.
Wow.
Yeah.
So then fast forward, almost 20 years and here comes Commodity. What made you decide to get back into fragrance with Commodity? How did that land in your lap?
Well, before fast forwarding to today, let's just kind of take a halfway point, right? So in 2010, more or less, I had this idea. So I, you know, my brand at that time, 20 years ago, was quote unquote a niche brand, right? So this word niche didn't exist at that time, or artisanal. But
right, yeah.
You know, what it means today is something in limited distribution made by, you know, a small company, the artistic vision, handcrafted type of concept really wasn't a thing back then. So in 2010, I looked back and I thought our product was really quite successful. I just didn't know how to run a company when I was 22. So I thought, you know, there's really a market for these artisanal brands, and especially looking at stores in Europe, you know, concept shops like Colette and now Merci and other kind of other concept shops. I love this idea of selling fragrances in alternative places, kind of anti-commercial fragrances. So our first brand, believe it or not, was Juliet Has a Gun.
I love them.
So I had written a letter to the founder, Ramona Ricci, saying, look, I'm in the fragrance business. I hate department stores. I have this idea that I want to sell fragrance to stores that don't sell fragrance, like high-end fashion shops, concept shops, anywhere that's, you know, cool. And I can kind of teach them how to sell a fragrance. And, you know, he called me, he's like, this is great. And I can, you know, I want to do the same thing. And it's my jacket. And so that was our first kind of niche artisanal brand. And then from 2008 or 2009 till now, we've been kind of this, you know, proponents of artisanal anti-commercial fragrances. And we represent 18 brands. So for last 10, 15, 12 years, you know, we're the ones, one of the ones here in the States that have been really trying to push this idea of niche and artisanal fragrances. Again, I really didn't ever consider making my own brand, or having my own brand rather. I had seen Commodity because obviously, you know, we're in the stores and we're out and about, like looking at every brand, reading literature and stuff. And really, there was really no contact. I mean, I knew the CEO at that point. And then I heard, you know, I heard they were having some trouble and that's it. I never gave it a second thought. And it was a bit unusual. I mean, to be honest with you, I was on the beach and I got an email from some lawyer saying, you know, we represent a company, you know, we represent the courts and this company went bankrupt and are you interested? And, you know, literally I'm at the beach under an umbrella. I'm like, you know what? I am interested. So it wasn't like, you know, I came back and had a big, long conversation. I was just like, yeah, I'm in. It literally lasted 3 or 4 weeks from the time I got that email to just buying it, to finish the deal. Yeah, it was really interesting, to be honest.
That's wild. If we could back up really quickly to how you talked about taking fragrances and putting them in stores that don't sell fragrance, obviously you found success in doing that. But do you think that that makes it more attractive to the consumer? Does it make it look, the fragrance itself, look more specialized or, you know, like more scarce when they're in a place that you might not expect to find a scent?
For sure. It's also the type of customer that we're going after. Exclusivity is a tough balance, right? So you want to be in stores that are cool. You want to be in stores that not everyone else is shopping in, but you don't want to be too secluded. You don't want to be too exclusive just in one location. So it was, for me, honestly, it was less pro cool store and more anti department store. I'll be honest.
Sure. Sure.
I shouldn't say department store. Anti commercial is a better word because I like department stores. I don't want to pay them. it was more about anti commercial. And trying to find, because, you know, we went to hotels, we went to clothing stores, all sorts of things. There really wasn't one type of store. But yes, we were going after a customer that was interested in finding products that were rare and in unusual places, for sure.
Cool.
That's awesome.
Yeah, I feel like shopping now is so much more identity focused.
Totally.
And especially with stores, like opening ceremony comes to mind. It doesn't matter what they sell, because it's in the store, it's cool.
Yep.
Yeah.
So that's a perfect example, right? So
people,
when they go into opening ceremony, and that's why I think a lot of these great stores, which some of them that have, you know, fashion and products that are quite expensive, you find that they do very well with their counter things, like, you know, the books and the candles and people want a part of retail, right?
So yes.
Even at Scoop, I'm sure you remember the old store Scoop.
Oh, yeah.
Well, then people like the Scoop, the bags, like the shopping bags.
Yes, totally. Right?
So they want a part of it. And that's what we were. So if you couldn't afford, you know, the $3,000 Balenciaga, whatever, you may be able to afford the $200 fragrance, which is still double the price of regular fragrance.
Sure.
So expensive, but more approachable than the high fashion.
Right.
Absolutely. So once you acquired Commodity and became the new founder, what's the first order of business?
I hope you're aware, but we're filming this docuseries.
Yeah.
We watched
a bunch of the episodes.
We love it.
Cool. I'm glad you like it. So it was, you know, it starts out by saying, look, I have no idea what I'm doing, but we're going to figure it out. And that's kind of the truth, to be honest, right? There's no way in 3 or 4 weeks, which is the amount of time it took us to buy the brand, that we could have done really all the due diligence and to see what kind of inventory there is, what our grand plans were, anything like that. So I figured, you know, let me just video the whole thing. And it's mostly I knew that it was going to take about a year to kind of really get up and running. So I wanted to keep the client base engaged during that period. My intention wasn't really for publicity outside of Commodity. It was really just to make sure that everybody who loved Commodity kept following the story, so that when, by the time we're back, hopefully they'll still keep loving and kind of continue with the brand. So the first order of business after buying it was getting the inventory, like to really see what you bought. It's like buying something at an auction, and then I got to enter the house and see what I really got, type of thing.
Yeah,
it's almost like those storage facility auctions.
It's exactly like that. Yeah. I was going to say that, but I just wasn't sure if you watched this.
We totally do. Yeah.
Right. So it's like those storage units, you know, did I score or did I not score?
So, yeah.
That's exactly how it was. And we spent a couple of months doing that. And what most people don't know about Commodity is that the previous owners were totally changing the design, like almost 100%, because, you know, it grew quite a bit in their hands the last year. And then they wanted to go global, and they had thoughts of entering other markets. And they just, you know, spent all this energy and money redesigning it. And when I saw that redesign, while it was nice, I didn't want to go through with it. So I had to actually backtrack. And by the way, there was nothing, right? So I bought essentially a name, a little bit of inventory, but nothing else. Everything else was kind of destroyed because they're redesigning it. So they have all these new bottles, new caps, new everything, which I'm not going to use. So,
wow.
And so the first thing was to see what we're going to do. What's the new commodity look like? What are we going to do with it? And the reason why I didn't want to go through with it was, I think one of your questions that were, you'd mentioned was, how do you go forward while not alienating kind of previous customers?
It's tricky,
right? So
yeah.
Most of the answers I get about why do you like commodity are, I don't know, it's cool. I like it. It's really not just about the fragrances. It's about the kind of visual appeal to it. It's the simplicity of it,
yes.
The elemental nature of it. It's kind of everything, right? The shape, the simple names, book, velvet, moss, gin, the fragrances are good. So literally if I ask someone in design, they're like, yeah, this is cool. I like it. I don't know what I like, but I like it. I asked the cleaning guy in my office, so I'm not years. I'm like, John, what do you think of this brand? He's like, I don't know. It's cool. I like it. So I was, still am, of course, afraid of changing that. You never want to redesign something and lose that part of it. So the first order of business was to make sure that the heritage of the brand is still there. And I think we did a really good job. But we're going to start revealing all that in the next couple of weeks, actually.
That's so exciting.
Yep.
I do feel like a big draw to that brand in particular is because it's so minimal and simple, and it's not trying to be anything it's not. And in fact, just the simplistic names and the simplistic design allows the user or customer to project their own ideas of what gin could be or what gold could be.
I think also the names to me, commodity has such huge name recognition.
Yes.
A lot of people that I know who aren't even fragrance people know and love commodity. And I think to me, the names have a lot to do with it because I know I can name 10 people right now who would buy book sight unseen. Same with gin, same with gold. And the fragrances are beautiful too, but a lot of these people who know and love them didn't smell them before they copped them. They just wanted a piece of that. The design, like you said, is gorgeous, but someone who reads all the time wear a fragrance called book, that's a full circle moment for them that I think they're not getting anywhere else. And you guys do really well.
Yeah, for sure. What's really interesting for me is the juice, right? Artisanal fragrances, the niche fragrances are different. They really are different than what you smell in department stores or in commercial.
Absolutely.
Places, right?
Yeah.
And we've always kind of made them a little bit inaccessible. So you're talking about opening ceremony, great, great place. But, all of America is not shopping an opening ceremony, right? So we've spent 10, 12 years in making these amazing brands, very exclusive, hard to get, kind of very expensive. But when commodity came along, I thought, these are actually really great artisanal fragrances that are at a really good price point that we can go, expose to a much wider marketplace. And I really like that because there's something common about it. What drew me to commodity also initially was the duality of everything, right? So commodity itself is a very readily available thing, right?
Yeah.
So that's what commodities are. That's what they say, don't commoditize something. And they're also very valuable when they're scarce, right? So if you think about something like rain, rain could be a pain in the ass or it could be super desired,
right?
Depending on where you are.
Yeah.
Gold is the same thing. A book, right? So book today, nobody cares. It's, you're reading online on your phone. Well, imagine you're down to the last book, the written paper. So there's this duality of everything, which is really, really interesting for me. Even the word commodity is kind of for us, a combination of the common and the odd, right? Common and oddity. So I found that really interesting too, actually, the two sides of everything.
Totally. I did think it was interesting the way the original names and scents were decided upon. Did you have a favorite?
Name or fragrance?
Either.
Either.
All right. Do you want to hear a secret?
Yes.
All of them.
So we have a 20,000 square foot warehouse.
Damn.
We have probably, I don't know, I think we have like 5,000 references, not of commodity, just in general, right? Of fragrance.
When you say references of fragrance, what does that mean?
Sorry, references of flavors, different brands. We have like 20 brands. Each brand has 20, 30 different flavors, let's say.
Okay.
So we have, thousands of different fragrances I could test out and wear. I don't have a single bottle of perfume in my house. Okay. So I actually don't even wear fragrance myself. Not because I don't like it. I don't know. I'm around it. By the way, my staff would kill me if they heard me saying it, but.
Well, have a healthy work-life balance.
Well, no, you know? I mean, you know, you're supposed to be always on and always selling, but it's not bad. I love, love, love fragrance. I mean, yeah. My dad used to come into my room, take a bottle of fragrance, point it at his face, mind you. Okay? I'm not saying in the air, not up in the air. Point it to his face, squirt 4 or 5 times, and then inhale, right?
Wow.
Yeah, imagine. That's how kind of my upbringing was. But I really don't have a favorite. And then when Commodity came along, I smelled a fragrance called Velvet. And
that's one of my favorites.
So good.
Yeah. There you go. So,
yeah.
I
mean,
and I just remember one morning, you know, my office is 10 minutes from my house. And so I just, in my mind, like, I subconsciously said to myself, I can't wait to get to the office so I can spray on some Velvet. And I caught myself thinking, wow, I actually like this. Is this something that I'm going to now start wearing? Is this going to be my fragrance? So that's my favorite fragrance, believe it or not.
Oh, I love that.
From the collection.
That is also one of mine.
there is some new stuff coming, which we can talk about.
I'm very excited to hear about the newness.
Yeah, hell yeah.
Because I remember watching your docuseries episode where you and your staff are sitting around a table and like basically all the fragrances are on a chopping block.
Right.
And some of my favorites stayed, thank God. Mm-hmm. And some of my favorites were not included. I loved Orris. I think Iris is a note that I just love in anything. So I was like, no, not Orris.
Sorry. I know. I'm trying not to put my personal feelings into it. To let you in on the Orris and Tonka and the chopping block. So all fragrances are staying, just so you know. So we're launching two things. So let me explain the new Commodity a little bit.
Okay.
Which we've talked about it a bit. So you're going to be the first to kind of hear about it in more in depth.
Yes.
So first of all the fragrances are going to live online, right? So even mm-hmm. things that we're not considering as part of the main collection will live as an archive collection, right? The archive collection will be a collection of, I don't know, 7 fragrances or 8 fragrances. And if, you know what, if enough people buy it and kind of hope, you know, vote and push and nudge enough, it'll graduate back into the permanent collection, but they're available. They're there. There's no, you know, they're not discontinued. What's really going to be interesting for us is, you know, our concept of scent space. So on one of the videos, we talked about scent space, and I'm not sure if you saw that particular video.
I did, yes, yeah. But I will let you explain.
Okay, so scent space was really, really critical. So as you can see, I'm not a traditionalist. I respect tradition very, very much. I respect classical art and so on, classical architecture. But I don't want to keep anything traditional just for the heck of keeping it, right? Mm-hmm. For the sake of keeping it. And so at Commodity, and in life in general, we really try to, first of all, make everything simple to go along with the idea of the brand, right? Round bottle, square box, short beams, all that kind of stuff. One of the things that I wanted to modify, do away with, or fix was this idea of intensity, right? So most people out there really don't know the difference between a cologne, eau de cologne, eau de toilette, parfum mm-hmm. de toilette, eau de parfum, parfum extract. Just keeps going on and on and on, right?
There's a lot, yeah.
There's a lot out there. I think some people know, most people know some things, but there's really no in-depth knowledge of what all that means. And that's one. And number two, I've met so many people that talk to me about their preference of how much they want their fragrances to project, right? So I'll just go within my own family. So my wife wants something that's super close to her. She does mm-hmm. not want to impose at all. She's the one that's sitting in that middle of that video, by the way. Then you have my sister who wants to be kind of, I don't want to say smelled, but noticed before she drives down my block, right? So I got her before she comes, and you'll know that she's been there, I don't know, 6 or 7 hours after she leaves. Right? So we have these different desires. And so instead of talking about concentration, we decide to talk about scent space. So how much space does a scent occupy around you? And initially, the idea was to take each one of the Commodity fragrances and put them into a different space, right? So moss could be a bit lighter, so it's more close to you. velvet is stronger. It could be more bold. But then the reaction to Sense Base was incredible, really incredible, to a point where people were saying, I'd love to see how gold would be as bold. Like, how can you put it on steroids, essentially? So the reveal soon, which you're hearing about now, is that six of the mainline fragrances will actually come in all scent spaces, right? So,
oh, whoa.
Nice.
So there'll be a gold that's, so the three scent spaces are personal, expressive, and bold. Obviously, personal is the lightest, expressive is the middle, and bold is the strongest. All the expressive ones are the original formula. So we haven't touched that.
Wow.
So if you're a book lover or a velvet like we are, you have the middle, right? You have the expressive, which is pretty much, I would say, what, if you're sitting at a table, the person across the table can probably, you know, smell. Mm-hmm. Or if you walk by, you can get a slight trail. There'll be what's called the personal version, or we call it the minus version. There'll actually be a minus sign and a plus sign, kind of like,
cool,
you know, like Tylenol. It's just
like temperature.
Exactly. So there'll be a velvet minus, or we call it velvet personal, and a velvet bold. And you get to choose, right? You get to decide how strong or how far you want your fragrances to project. So there'll be six, what we call sense-based fragrances, which are book, gold, moss, velvet, the new one, which is milk. Remember, paper.
Oh, paper. I remember that one.
Yeah, paper. Paper is an unbelievable fragrance, paper.
That's a really good one.
And paper. And so, and that's the reveal. And then you'll have the archive, right? So all the ones you like, leather, tonka, orris, whatever, they'll all still be available in the original fragrance, the original bottle, as part of the archive collection. So
cool. That's a great idea.
So when you are doing the same fragrance in three different scent spaces, do the notes change per scent space, or is it just the intensity of the juice itself?
Like the oil.
Yeah.
Right. So that's a great question.
Thank you.
So for all of them, let's say, except for one, they're not actually the same fragrance in different concentrations.
Oh, cool.
None of them, except for book. And we treated the personal ones, the minus, different than the bold, the pluses. So let's go to the pluses first, to the bolds. So the bolds are, number one, a higher concentration for sure. But number two, we added exotic notes in there to make it different. We added a smoky note, for example, to make it smokier, stronger, gold.
A remix.
Kind of a remix. Yeah. Really kicked it up a notch, right?
I mean,
because we did want to change the fragrance profile. I thought it was boring just to have the same thing in a stronger concentration.
Totally.
And so it's definitely a different fragrance by, I don't know, let's say 15, 20%. Now, that's the plus, right? That's the bold fragrances.
Yeah.
The minuses, which to me are super exciting, and if you're in the fragrance world, you'll know more about this, but this trend of kind of molecular fragrances, right? So we talk about isobutyl, right? All these kind of ambroxan, all these great, great molecules. I love them. And so the minuses, the personals have this, all of them actually, are essentially an underlying molecular collection that have a hint and a shadow of the original fragrance. So we've essentially, so if you imagine taking an ISOE super and putting a tad of velvet in there.
Right.
So it becomes this kind of shadow fragrance. It becomes
the skin scent.
It's a skin scent. I'm personally in love with paper. Paper is an odd one, right? Because paper itself already was an ISOE super to start out with. So it began as a skin scent. And so that one, to make it a lighter personal or a stronger bold, was difficult, right? So the approach we took with paper was to use different molecules. So we'll use Cetaluxin 1, which gives a different profile, ISOE super in another. I'm not even sure the third one has ISO plus some creamy notes to make it, of course, bold and more projecting and occupying more of the scent space. The only fragrance that I mentioned from the beginning that we didn't touch, to be honest with you, was book. And I don't know why. I'm afraid.
I feel like book especially has its own kind of unique following the brand.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So I feel like a lot of people would be upset if that got changed.
Yeah, for sure. I was terrified to touch it. So we just made it a little bit lighter. Well, book, definitely book minus the personal.
Yes.
Is book with ISOE super for sure.
Okay.
Book plus is the same exact fragrance, exactly the same as a higher concentration. I just couldn't touch that fragrance. I'm a wine. I had this like faux leather
protection. I think many people will be happy about that.
Yeah. So yeah, it's exciting. I'm curious to see how people will you know, it'll resonate, if it'll resonate with the scent space with the commodity customer.
I think it's a really great idea because like customization and beauty in general is, I feel like, the next frontier of beauty. Like yeah. In skincare, it's huge, and in makeup and hair care now. But like, I mean, like you said earlier, like fragrance in general is fairly overlooked. So to have this customizable, personalized spin on it, plus the same concepts interpreted three different ways, is to me a very attractive idea.
Thank you.
Yeah. Can we talk about milk?
Yes, please.
As like the new advent of commodity 2.0.
Milk. So, you know, so you asked originally what my favorite was. And I said, is it, you know, what, I guess I asked you with fragrance or name. So fragrance wise, obviously it's Velvet, but Milk is my favorite name. And
it's very evocative, like in general.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. I don't know. It's one of those things like, can you say why? I'm like, I don't know. I don't know why. I like it. And it's exactly what commodity is about. You know, I don't know why, but I like it. Why? Because first of all, it fits into the commodity, the word, right? So milk is something you buy every day. And as we learned from the pandemic, when it's not available, how valuable it becomes, that along with toilet paper, but obviously we're not going to name it toilet paper, right?
God.
Charmin.
Well, we have paper.
The yeah, toilet that's other. True.
So it fits the commodity. There's something about it that's really elemental, right? So everything we're doing, we really want to have this elemental undertone. So even the scent space, going back to it for a second, has little domino dots that the dots intensify. So there's a visual representation of scent space, the small, medium, and large, or depth rather. So I felt that milk really fit right in. It's really evocative in terms of a fragrance as well, in terms of what you think it would smell like.
Yes.
Something you would not want to put on your skin, which is great. So we worked on a fragrance, which has really almond notes, little fiery notes, milky notes. I wouldn't say it's a super gourmand meaning food-based, but you know, this is the other thing. Let's digress for a second longer. Explaining fragrance, this is our next challenge. So if we're trying to really simplify everything on with commodity, we're really trying to figure out a way to talk about fragrance, right? If you look at the old commodity, one of the things that they had were these great videos about the perfumers, and the perfumers would get on and be like, oh, this is a, you know, rose petal, and I was inspired by the sun and the moons and the stars. And I personally was never into any of that. I'm not saying I'm not into the art of it. I love the art of it. I mean, they're geniuses with their, you know, with what they're doing, but
totally,
I don't think people relate to that kind of language, right? Yeah. Even the word gourmand, obviously you guys know what gourmand is, but most people don't know what gourmand is. So,
right.
How do I explain what milk smells like? And so I haven't figured that out. So I'm not going to do a great job today because I don't want to just list the ingredients and tell you what it's about. I can tell you it's a light, light gourmand, kind of food based, a little nutty, a little almondy, a little milky notes, and I hope you like it.
That sounds good as hell.
That sounds really good.
Yeah.
I think, well, even when you just said the name, immediately my brain kind of had an idea of what that would not necessarily smell like, but what it would feel like. Like my brain immediately went to like creamy notes, gourmand, but light, like not overpowering, like a subtle, like cashmere, like kind of vibe.
It's, I mean, you're describing it exactly. The problem with fragrance, I always, you know, when I talk to really anybody, I talk about the difficulty of describing scents. And I always use pizza, believe it or not. I use pizza as an example, right? Because I always think like, what's harder to sell than fragrance online, digitally, right? Without smelling. Mm-hmm. And even food is way easier, right? Because if I tell you pizza, if I show you a picture of a slice of New York pizza, right? The flavor profile is not going to change more than like, I don't know, 20-30%. You know, it could be a little more cheesy, a little less cheesy, but you know what pizza basically tastes like, right?
Yes.
If I see you in floral, I mean, it could be anything. It could be anything. It could be a sweet floral. It could be an oriental. It could be, you know, spicy floral. It could literally, it could be strong. It could be light. It could be just, you know, rose petal-y, right? So just take a rose. You have rose petal that smells one way. You have the headspace of rose that smells another way. You have the rose oil that smells another way.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this, and by the way, this is just layman's, that's just me talking. If you talk to a perfumer, they'll tell you there's 100 different ways a rose can smell.
Right.
So it's really, really, and then of course, where's the rose from, right? Is it
total, yes. It's a Bulgarian rose. Right, it's like a Moroccan rose. Yeah.
Exactly. So So I'm sorry, but I haven't mastered the art of explaining fragrance online.
No, that's okay.
It's so difficult.
We get really excited about explaining things different ways because we know that a fragrance copy often doesn't tell anyone anything.
It never does.
You know, it's confusing. Right. There's a lot of opportunity to bring it to life. So anything that's a little left of center that way, I think, is preferred.
So actually, I have a question for you. How about this?
Shoot.
Okay. So one of the things we're thinking about, I don't know who brought this up, but of course, online, we're going to think about how to describe fragrance, right? So one of the things that we were thinking about doing was to have a review of somebody who hates the fragrance. Okay. Because it really depends on, I think a hate review could be helpful to somebody, right? So if someone says, you know what, let's talk about Beloved or Osiris, right?
Okay.
I'll give you my review. I don't like it because it's too strong and I just, you know, I don't like powdery smells, right?
Sure.
So that's not really hating on the fragrance. Someone's just talking about their preference, right? So by someone saying what they don't like, the people that do like that profile will appreciate it. So we're actually even thinking about putting negative review and seeing what people think about it. The total transparency.
I do remember actually a TV show about like sexy, dangerous teenagers. And all of the billboards on the subways were these like reviews from like parents that were like, don't let your kids watch this.
Yes. Like
it's such a bad influence. And like they slapped those reviews like on the posters, which I thought was kind of clever.
Absolutely. Yeah. I think fragrance is so subjective that the more I think about it, the more that could definitely work in the way that you are saying it. Because, you know, when you, like you said, when you talk about a scent you don't like, what are you doing? You're still describing it.
Right.
And so a lot of, you know, a lot of people would react to that in a positive way, I would think. It might not be like the thing I'd hear out on the product page, but you know, it's definitely something that like you could, it would be worth exploring.
Well, either, you know, either I'm an idiot or I'm a genius. It's going to be one of those two things.
I guess we'll find out.
We'll find out.
You know what? You can try it. It's like throwing spaghetti at the wall. Just like see what sticks.
Well, and now's the time to do it too. Yeah. Since, you know, you're revamping everything. Why not?
Why not? I mean, that's also, you know, that's also part of our strategy is there's something, I don't want to discredit at all. There's something super serious about the art of fragrance creation. There really, really is. I mean, again, I say it, they're real artists, the perfumers that make them. I would never say I'm a perfumer. I rarely talk about fragrance because I don't do justice talking about, you know, talking about fragrances. I really believe they're artists. But at the end of the day, I also don't believe it has to be so serious. Just like the perfumer believes in the art of creating the fragrance, I believe in the art of marketing a fragrance.
Yeah, I feel like the power of marketing with fragrance, like fragrance relies so heavily on marketing because it's such an experiential thing. So that's why, like, I understand selling things online, like sight unsmelled.
I think a lot about that, whether it is with fine fragrance or candles. There are so many direct-to-consumer fragrance brands right now that are all sort of trying to bring their scents off of the screen in different ways.
Speaking earlier about when we were talking about these lifestyle brand stores, who do you think the commodity customer is? If you had to picture a type of person, like who would be interested in commodity, who do you think that would be?
Oh, not as a store, but as a person.
As a person, yeah. Like who's the type of person that you think is going to be all about commodity?
I want someone who wants something different. That's the oddity part of it. That's the half. Mm-hmm. And the other half, honestly, I really, really, really want to expose people who are so used to commercial fragrances to these artisanal fragrances or these fragrance profiles. Because a fragrance like book, velvet, paper, you can't go to Macy's and find them. You just can't. And I love the fact that you have these great fragrance profiles that so many people have not smelled up till now. So the perfect customer is one who wants to really try a different fragrance profile. Someone who wants something different, who wants to expand their kind of flavor, fragrance horizon.
I feel like there are so many options too now that curiosity is just like a natural part of buying fragrance these days. Yeah, I can see people really gravitating toward commodity in that way.
Yeah. And I remember previously when commodity was in Sephora, and like Sephora, I feel like, is a great balance between department store beauty and you know, more boutique experiences, mm-hmm. because like you have people there to help you, but also they can just leave you alone, which honestly, that I think that's why I was so surprised when I heard that Commodity originally was kind of shutting down.
Same.
So I was like, wait, you guys are like Sephora bestsellers.
Sephora,
like,
what is the problem?
I was like, what's the issue here?
I was surprised too. One of the things that that appealed to me about Commodity, by the way, was how fast it shut down. This was just like lights out. There was no negative energy. It was just turned off. We didn't have to fix any bad momentum or whatever they had. So
sure,
that was an appeal of it. The sudden shutdown was an appeal to me, believe it or not.
That makes sense.
Yeah, it's good because then no one remembers like, oh, remember when they started getting bad?
Yeah, exactly. Like, there are no perceptions to change.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Commodity, in my experience, was one of the first direct-to-consumer fragrance brands because they would send the discovery kit, which I thought was such a cool concept. And just like really fun too. It's like a little present or like an advent calendar.
Right.
And that I kind of think kicked off this change in the fragrance landscape, because then I think other brands saw the success of that. And, you know, it sort of inspired the experiential approach, especially when you're right, people aren't going to department stores as much. So knowing that Commodity was one of those pioneers, how do you think you want to move forward with that or away from that kind of experiential impact?
I felt that in looking at the redesign, it kind of was moving away from that direction. I felt it was away from the original DNA of the brand.
Uh-huh.
So everything we're doing is geared towards bringing that back. Honestly, I find this challenge of how do you service somebody, you know, without a retail store, absolutely fascinating. And you're right. The discovery kits, the sampling is key. And then we follow up with the sample. Some companies don't even offer samples, believe it or not. Some of the fragrance men don't sample the way they should. And I always tell them that's like having a retail store, having someone come in and saying, you know what, you can buy this product, but I'm not going to let you smell it, right?
Yeah, that's wild.
Right.
Especially for fragrance. That's so interesting that you say about a global initiative. Yeah. So when you want to push for a global movement, do you think that there are, because obviously different cultures have totally different attitudes towards fragrance. And I would probably assume actually that like Americans are the least fragrance enthusiastic. Maybe that's the right word. So do you think that there are fragrances you're excited to make with a global audience in mind that if you weren't going globally, you wouldn't necessarily create for an American audience?
That is a great question. So in the fragrance kind of business, you'll meet a lot of brands and the brands will always tell you this. We're going to make a fragrance that's especially for the Middle East.
Very oriental.
You hear this all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Then you'll hear people that say, you know what, we're going to make a fragrance really targeted to Asia because they like light fragrances. So you hear this enough, you think, okay, well, people actually have different flavor fragrance desires in the Middle East versus America versus Europe versus Asia, right? Okay. So that's point one. Point two, think about every successful brand and think about the best seller of every fragrance, right? So let's take our beloved Creed with their Aventus, right? Mm-hmm. Aventus is successful, guess where? The whole world. And so where's this idea that Asia needs a different fragrance, Middle East needs a different fragrance?
Yeah.
Let's look at Baccarat Rouge. Everywhere.
Yeah.
Everywhere. It's successful, right? So on one hand, you have this theory that different parts of the world require different fragrances. Mm-hmm. And on the other hand, look at every single bestseller, J'adore.
Cooler. Right.
I mean, just go down the line. They're successful globally. That was hard to reconcile for me. I go back to sense base. And so for me, what I've realized is that the different regions actually like different strengths.
I could see that. Yeah, right? Definitely.
Stereotype, I'm going to say that Middle East likes stronger fragrances.
Mm-hmm.
America likes just right, like just in the middle. Mm-hmm. And Asia likes lighter fragrances. I mean, if I'm going to be super stereotypical about it. And that's why I thought, let me not make a fragrance for Middle East or a fragrance for Asia. Let's take gold and see if we can make a personal version. I'm not going to say just for Asia. It could be for anybody. But let's say, cool, for Asia. And let's make a bold, obnoxious, strong version for the Middle East. And so we're trying a real different approach. And I believe that the fragrance profile itself is good enough to be global. Potentially, the concentration needs to change because they have desires, you know, different kind of, not desires, but different, you know, likes and dislikes in terms of strength of fragrance. And so that's the kind of experiment we're doing with the scent space for global positioning.
That's really smart.
That's
just like, yeah, as a brand and as a business.
It's so interesting to me. Yeah. I mean, globally speaking, America is a newer country in general, but the things that we think are popular or normalized, I should say, like around the world, just like aren't.
But, right. You know, I can, let me tell you kind of not a secret, but the American consumer, once they like a fragrance, they don't stop buying it forever.
Of a signature scent is very American.
Forever. When I say forever, you know, I'm not going to say which brand it is, but one of the brands kind of stopped working for us because the client base literally died. That's how old they
were. Oh my God.
You know, wow. They just kind of died. They went to their grave wearing this fragrance. And what's different about America versus France or Middle East, or I'm not really sure about Russia, but once you stop marketing a fragrance in other countries, the consumer moves on. They really move on. That's the big secret of America. You know, if you stick it out in the fragrance business, it's like a slow moving train. It takes a long time to get it going, but it's kind of virtually impossible to stop at the end. So the myth of Americans not being fragrance centric is a myth, I think.
Yeah, I think, well, scent in general is so closely tied to memory. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so it's like once that scent kind of just like latches on to a nostalgic memory that's important and significant in your life, like
it's over.
It like imprints on you.
Yeah.
That's a great way of putting it. It's exactly. Yeah. But I don't know why it's only for us. I don't see it the rest. I don't see it for, well, the imprinting happens everywhere. Of course, everyone talks about their, you know, child memories, or whatever. But I mean, in terms of just being desperate to not lose their signature scents, I don't know. I find it very American and I love it, by the way. It keeps us going. So very happy that we're this way.
I think it's because like, and the only people who've told me this are people who are not American, is that part of what these international friends of mine admire about Americans is our sense of individualism. And fragrance is a part of your self-expression and your personality. And I think when people really find one that they think aligns with their identity, it's like, this is my identity. Right. So this is my signature in a way.
Yeah. And you're right. And I think what's amazing about our business is that I think people fall into two buckets. Either you found it and you stick with it forever, or you hadn't and you just keep looking and you keep trying.
Mm-hmm.
I think either way, it's
like romance.
That's actually a good analogy.
Yeah. Finding the perfect fragrance.
We're giving away too much. So.
Finding the perfect partner. We'll invoice you at the end of this.
I think things go wrong sometimes in both worlds.
Oh, absolutely.
Yep.
Milk. Can you imagine wearing milk?
No, because I'm lactose intolerant.
I forgot about
that. But it sounds good. I mean, I'm going to. That actually sounds really good. I like that the first thing that they did is something soft and approachable, but isn't like a skin scent. And I'm sorry, I don't mean to be a hater, but like it just, they could have easily done another one or Santal 33 or a U. And I like that they're doing something. Sorry, God. But you know what I mean? It's like, it's not so expected.
I agree.
I'm excited about that. To do a milk scent that's creamy and like almondy. That's cool.
I liked that he called it like elemental.
Yeah.
Because it's like, oh, it's like a basic, you know, like the old school food pyramid, but it's something that has not really been interpreted via scent.
Yeah.
So that's really, I'm really excited to try that.
I am too. And I think it says a lot about the future and the direction that they want to go and where they see themselves going. And I don't know. I think it's good.
Yeah.
You know, it's not what I would have expected from them. New scent out the gate.
I was really curious to see if, because like obviously I'm sure they're going to put out new fragrances, like mm-hmm. where they were going to take it.
Yeah.
Like if they were going to just go totally off script
mm-hmm.
and just have something like, I don't know, eucalyptus pond.
Right. Right. I mean, I get that he is the CEO, but mm-hmm. I think that he has a really good understanding of what commodity is and has been and how to stick close to mm-hmm. that, both with the scents themselves, but in the naming conventions and all of that. Like, I think that he really gets it, which of course, like he now owns the brand, but not, you know, the same cannot be said for every, you know, brand owner or CEO.
That's true, especially when they change hands.
Yeah.
A lot of times the new owners are like, I'm going to make my mark. And then they put a personal spin on things that totally fails.
Yeah.
It's not about them, but exactly. They think it is.
Exactly.
Yeah. I love the concept of the personal, the scent spaces.
I do too.
It's so cool.
I do too. And I like that there are different versions of the same scent. I think that's great. And it also takes, like I said, I think off camera to you, like not only does that, I mean, that takes so much more work than just intensifying the fragrance. It mm-hmm. it takes more labor, more testing, more formulations, more production. Like that's a big undertaking. To me, it speaks to how much this new brand cares about the brand itself.
Yeah. I mean, they're essentially making 3 new scents for every
scent,
existing scent. Or I guess 2 because the expressive is the same. But
right.
Yeah.
If I could do simple math, I could tell you how many that nets out to, but I can't. It's going to be a mystery.
You know what? I'm too beautiful to be good at math, so God doesn't give with both hands.
No.
Anyway, I really hope you enjoy that episode, and I don't know about you guys, but I'm really excited to sniff the new commodity and the old commodity. I miss them.
Same. I mean, you know, we do a question on our Instagram story every Tuesday after the episode drops, and we love seeing and hearing your answers. And a lot of them go back to commodity. So mm-hmm. I know that we have some fans in the audience, and I can't wait to hear what you guys think of the new brand.
Yeah. Well, that's our episode.
We love it. We love it. As always, follow us on Instagram mm-hmm. at smellyoulater.mp3. Follow me at TynanBuck.
And I'm at Sabletooth Tigra.
Love you. Smell you later.
See you later.